Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome once again to another episode of So I Married a Horror Fan. I'm one of your co-hosts, Simon.
I'm Lee.
And today, the time is finally upon us. On the 22nd of March, 2024, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire is here. Now, those of you that know, with our new release reviews, if you've listened to one before, you know that we're going to do this review in two parts. First, 10 to 15 minutes is going to be spoiler free, and then after that we are going to go into full spoilers. So if you are planning to see Ghostbusters Empire opening, Frozen Empire opening weekend, you just want to, you know, see a review that's not going to be like, oh, this movie's fucking rubbish and it's for nostalgia and like all of some of the other critics, then you can listen to the first 10 minutes of this completely spoiler free. If you have seen the movie already, or you don't care about spoilers, then you can just crack on. But we will timestamp everything, and we will tell you when we're going into full spoilers. Unlike some people online who had seen the movie prior to this, and did not spoiler warning their reviews, and then just started spoiling shit. We won't do that to you. We're ready to believe you, and we won't do that to you. So, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire 2024, directed by Gil Kenan, from a script by Jason Reitman and Gil Kenan. That's all you're getting in this part. We'll do the full bit in the second bit. This is the follow-up to Ghostbusters Afterlife from 2021, which was written again by Jason Reitman and Gil Kenan and directed by Jason Reitman. This one follows on 3 years from Frozen Empire. Frozen Empire to Afterlife, there's a three-year time jump.
I think so.
Or two-year time jump.
I'm trying to think how old...
Oh, no, it's a two-year time jump.
He's 16.
Because
he's
in Afterlife, Trevor's about to turn 16 that year, and then he's 18 in this one. Phoebe was 13, and she's now
15.
Now 15. So, yes, that makes sense. Also, I didn't realise the age gap was that big between them. I didn't realise there's a three-year age gap between the kids. So,
I'm pretty sure as well, there's numerous times where fucking Goober said references, it being 2 years ago, I was in, like, teaching.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's where we're at. If you want to know what happened in between Afterlife and Frozen Empire, I keep calling it Firehouse, Frozen Empire, then there is a comic book, Ghostbusters Back in Town, which fills in the blanks of what's been happening with the Groob Spengelans. That's what I'm just going to call them now.
Groob Spengelsons.
The Groob Spengelsons. In the meantime. So, I think it's safe to say we both quite enjoyed Afterlife. I saw Afterlife 3 times at the cinema, and I think we both really enjoyed Afterlife. I think you were pleasantly surprised by how much you enjoyed Afterlife. And I think Afterlife was kind of a really good return to the main timeline of the Ghostbusters franchise. So, I had kind of high expectations for Frozen Empire. I don't know what your expectations were based on the fact that you're not a fan, but you enjoyed Afterlife. Because it was the characters in Afterlife that you enjoyed. So what were your expectations going into Frozen Empire?
To be fair, as a general rule, I try not to go into films with too many expectations. So I feel like that's how you ruin it for yourself.
Unless it's a Fast and Furious movie. Then you've got to have them expectations.
And then my expectations are super low, so that I am no way disappointed.
Although, the Fast and Furious franchise and the Ghostbusters franchise are now both about the same thing. Family.
But yeah, I try really not to go into it with expectations. So I didn't really have any expectations of this film other than there was going to be some ghosts getting busted.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really all I was expecting from this film.
So, give me your... Because we haven't talked about this. We're recording this at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We saw this... First show in opening day, 10:30 this morning, at our local showcase cinema. Mad respect to the man who sold me the last Moogly topper on a cup. Mad respect to that man. So what we... Because we haven't spoken about this yet. This is literally the first conversation we're having about this film. What was your main takeaway from this one? Okay.
There's not a lot I can say without branching into spoilers, but I was quite disappointed by this film.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard a lot of people say that Afterlife, as Ghostbusters fans, maybe not so much yourself, but as Ghostbusters fans, Afterlife was the sequel that we needed, and this is the one that we wanted. And from the trailers, it very much felt like that. It very much felt like this was a traditional Ghostbusters 3 rather than Afterlife, which kind of feels a little bit like its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I, again, without giving any spoilers away, because I don't want to spoil anything, because there's a bunch of stuff in the trailers that... a bunch of stuff in the film that's not in the trailers. There's not even hinted at. And there's a couple of wild things in the film that, like, aren't hinted at the trailers, which kind of threw me for a loop. My main thing with this, and I felt this... and I'm kind of interested to see now if Gil Kenan and Jason Reitman are going to be, like, the stewards of this franchise going forward, or if they will introduce new writers and new directors, because it felt very much like... this film, much like Afterlife, is Phoebe's film. It feels like they created Phoebe and then they forgot to give a shit about everybody else.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I feel. Like, I didn't mind the fact that there were 752 Ghostbusters characters in this movie. Like, the number of characters in this movie didn't bother me, but the progression of the characters that were introduced in Afterlife to this movie bothered me. The only two people who get any sense of character development is Gary, because of now his place in the family,
and Phoebe.
And Phoebe. And once again, it becomes Phoebe's film. And now, I'm not against that, because I love Phoebe as a character. I think Phoebe's a really great character. But it's very obvious that with Egon gone... she is now the character that they are going to hinge. She's the bridging point between the old characters and the new characters. And she's the one that clearly they want to carry the franchise forward. Because Lucky gets...
zero screen time.
She gets fuck all to do. Her character's not even that, like, well-developed from Afterlife to this one. The place that she's in this movie is basically the same place that she's in the first movie. Podcast gets a little bit more to do.
What is his name?
I don't know. But do you know what's really funny, actually, now that you say that? And I know why Podcasts is on his thing, because we don't know his name. But why is Lucky's name patch on her flight suit Lucky and not Domingo? Because obviously...
they might have asked them what they wanted on their flight suit.
Because all of them have their surnames on them. Mm. And Podcast doesn't even have a name badge. He just has his written on his Sharpie. Like, Red Sharpie, I think it is like...
I'm pretty sure that's a call over from the first... from Afterlife, though. Because I'm pretty sure he does that in Afterlife.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure it's the same flight suit that he's got in Afterlife. Whereas Lucky's got the R&D flight suit in this one. But yeah, it's just... so, yeah, Podcast gets a little bit more to do.
But because, not much.
Because he gets paired up with one of the other characters. And then he gets, like, a few extra scenes in this. But his... place in the finale, he literally, I'm not even like, not even kidding, he does exactly the same thing again. Like, he does exactly the same thing, and it's like, you couldn't think of anything better. This is Garaka. This is a life and death Avengers level threat that needs 65 Ghostbusters to fight him, and you can't have him do anything more than what he does. Or what he did in the last one. And then Callie gets fuck all. I think Callie's lack of character development is probably the most infuriating for me. Because in the first movie, she's like, yeah, fuck my dad. He was a prick. Fuck science. Don't give a shit about any of it. I just want the house. I just want the money. Like, I can't talk to my kids. And now in this one, they're like, they go back on everything that she was in the first movie. But then don't really explain how she got to that resolution. Which, mm-hmm. Like, obviously, if you've seen Afterlife, it kind of makes a bit more sense why she would soften to certain things. But she literally goes from 0 to 100 without any real explanation of how she's grown as a person in the 3 years. Which they may explain in the comic book, to be fair. But, like, there's no sense of, like...
yeah, but the problem is, he's, like, relying on people having have read the comic book is ridiculous. Like, you shouldn't have to...
yeah, especially, like, the casual, like, not a diehard Ghostbusters fan, like, people that just casually enjoy these films. Yeah. And Trevor, like, Trevor genuinely has zero character development.
No.
But he does get some cool scenes with one of the other characters, which people have probably seen in the trailers. So I don't consider this a spoiler because it's in the trailers and I assume you've seen the spoilers. But his scenes with Slimer are fucking great.
Yeah, his scenes with Slimer are fun.
But like outside of that, I was like, it's the film is very oddly paced. Like, it starts off really frenetic, really like throws you in, and then it slows right down, and then it like speeds up again. I didn't have as much of an issue with the pacing as what a lot of people seem to do.
I have quite a lot of problems with the pacing.
The pacing for me so much isn't the issue. It's more that they slow the film down and then, again, they give like 4 or 5 characters like little side quests to do. Ooh. And then other characters just disappear for a really long period of time. There's also a bunch of scenes in the trailers and TV spots that are not in this movie, but we'll talk about those a little bit more in the other part of the trailer. But yeah, I would say for me, I didn't walk out of this one feeling as excited or as energized or as happy as I did after seeing Afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked out of this one kind of not necessarily worried about the future of the franchise, but more a case of like, okay, something drastically needs to change, because I didn't feel this one was as callback heavy. And like, that's a criticism I've seen quite a lot, is like, oh, they're back in the same firehouse, they're back in New York, this character's there, that character's there, they're doing the same thing. And I was like, that's kind of not true. I didn't feel like a retread of the first two movies, like I think a lot of people have said it was.
Hmm.
But at the same time, there's like 3 or 4 really interesting threads that they put into this movie that I hope that they explore in other films. And also, Gil Kenan, I don't want to call you out, but you are a fucking liar. Like, he turned around and said in interviews...
Be careful.
No, it's not a spoiler. He turned around and said in interviews while he was promoting this movie that the main Ghostbusters, the main three, were integral characters to the plot of this movie, and they weren't just there for cameos. That, without spoiling anything, is fucking bullshit. Because while some of them are integral...
Yeah, I was going to say, some of them are integral, others not so much. Yeah,
let's just say one of them is super integral. The other two basically didn't need to show up. But fucking Janine was there and that was cool. But yeah, did you have any other like initial kind of like thoughts on the movie?
Not massively. Sorry, guys. Not massively. I think you've covered most of the stuff I'd have touched on anyway.
Yeah. Cool. So that was kind of like our initial thoughts on Ghostbusters, like Frozen Empire. Like I enjoyed it. I think I wanted a little bit more of what the trailers were trying to sell me. And I think when we recorded our Afterlife episode 3 years ago, I'd seen Afterlife a couple of times before because of how emotional that film is. And I kind of had very strong feelings on this based on the first view. And I am going to go and see it again next week. But I didn't feel like I needed to see this one multiple times to gather my feelings to record the episode. But yeah, so that's kind of like my initial thoughts on Frozen Empire. That's your initial thoughts on Frozen Empire. So everything from this point forward will be full spoilers. So we warned you. There'll be timestamps. If you listen to anything past this point and you haven't seen the film, that's on you. That's not on us. So from this point forward, the rest of the review will be full spoilers and we'll be really getting into everything. So you have been warned. Okay, so here we go. Full spoilers. Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire. Yeah, this is Lee's time to shine.
I was gonna say, don't be going nowhere, I'll do all this shit yet. So yeah, you did the director and writers, so we've already covered that off. Cast-wise though, so we've got Paul Rudd back as Gary Gruberson, Carrie Coon as Callie Spengler, Jesus Christ.
Do you know how many times I get that confused, because her name's Carrie and Callie?
Yeah, Finn Wolfhard as Trevor, McKenna Grace as Phoebe, Kamal Nanjiani as Nadim, Patton Oswalt as Dr. Hubert Wartzik. Wartsky. Celeste O'Connor as Lucky. Logan Kim as Podcast. Emily Allen Lind, thank you, as Melody. James Acaster as Lars Pinfield. Bill Murray as Peter Venkman. Dan Aykroyd as Ray Sands. Ernie Hudson as Winston Zeddemore. Annie Potts as Janine Melnitz. William Atherton as Mayor Walter Peck. And then I think that's kind of it, unless we've got any vote out. Ian White, it's just spelled weird. It was the puppeteer for Garaka, and Kevin Mangold was the puppeteer for Slimer. And I don't know if there's a voice actor for Garaka, because he does talk.
Mm-hmm.
So...
He's not particularly chatty, though.
He's not, but there doesn't seem to be a credited voice actor for Garaka.
But that might be one of those things where, like, they just haven't revealed who the actor is yet.
Very well could be. You could be onto something there. But, yeah, I can't find anything about who voiced him, so we don't have that. But, yes, yeah, so this film was made on a budget of $100 million.
Oh.
I know. And has made 7,521 worldwide.
So far. That'll be opening night money. Like,
yeah, I'm assuming so. Because it's literally opening day today, so
mm-hmm.
we're not entirely sure that's correct. Boom! I've done my bit. So, oh, hang on.
What is this? Some kind of frozen empire?
Yeah. Stop doing that, please. Lord God, I beg of you. But yeah, no, so I have a lot of feelings about this because I said I didn't really go in with any expectations, but I did kind of go into this expecting to enjoy it because I'd liked Afterlife so much, which I'm not a huge Ghostbusters fan, so it's kind of a big deal that I liked the film. I mean, no, I don't like Ghostbusters. I don't want to be relatively clear on that. I do like Ghostbusters in general, but I wasn't really raised on it. So
yeah, you're
like
not obsessed with Ghostbusters.
I'm not obsessed. But I went into it kind of with some expectation of kind of what I thought the movie would play out like. And this was the problem, is that like, I couldn't really say this. Because I went into it going, oh, so Garaka's going to appear maybe like 30 minutes into the film. Mm-hmm. We'll meet Garaka. That he will release all of the ghosts, like, straight away. And then the movie will be them trying to basically bring back all of the ghosts that have escaped while also trying to take out Garaka at the same point, and everyone will be kind of paired off and sent chasing after different ghosts all over New York.
Yeah, I think that was kind of the assumption. I honestly thought, and this will be the second time I bring this up, and it will probably be the last time I bring this up, I thought the film was going to be similarly plotted to Avengers, the first Avengers movie, like you said. I thought there was going to be, like, the setup was going to be the first act. This is who Garaka is. This is what we're up against. This is where the characters are now. The second act was going to be like the Battle for Manhattan, where you have all of the different Avengers fighting the Chitauri while, like, Loki's fucking about. And then, obviously, the final bit is them facing Loki and then taking him down, which is kind of, like, exactly how I thought this was going to be plotted.
Is a pretty standard plot way.
Yeah,
way of laying it.
And the thing is, like, the trailer makes it feel like it's going to be that sort of way. And I guess we should probably talk about, since we're already talking about him, we should probably start with Garaka and work backwards. Because I thought, like, we had a conversation in the car the other day, because we'd gone to Odeon to go and pick up some of the colour-changing cups, and the cups have got Garaka on them. And I remember saying to you, I was like, what do we think about Garaka? Do we think Garaka's going to suck, or do we think he's going to be, like, a good villain? Because, like, you know, obviously Afterlife and the original Ghostbusters, you have Goza, and then obviously in Ghostbusters 2, you've got Viggo, the sexy painting. And obviously this one of the first things I found out quite interesting about Garaka is Garaka's older than Goza.
Yeah.
Because Goza is a Sumerian god.
Garaka is pre-Sumerian.
So Garaka's, like, really old. Like, super fucking old. Like, proper Old Testament shit. And I was like, I want to say one thing. The scene where they explain his backstory
with the animated
was really
carvings.
Fucking cool. Like,
that is
cool. Like, they found a way that was really fun to kind of explain his backstory without having to do, like, weird fucking epic flashbacks or anything like that. And I thought that was really interesting and felt very in keeping with, like, the franchise to this point. The problem I have with Garaka is they take so much time filling in, like, all of these other blanks and using all of these other weird, sometimes unnecessary, sometimes necessary subplots, that by the time Garaka appears, unleashes the ghost, and is defeated, like, quicker than I think the first trailer for this movie was.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's built up to be this, like, huge, we need all hands on deck, like, we need every available Ghostbuster that we can get our hands on to fight him. And his army of ghosts. And, like, when you hear that this movie's going to be inspired by the real Ghostbusters, and they made a massive thing in the trailers about every ghost they've ever captured since 1984 is about to be unleashed, like 40 years worth of ghosts. You think, oh, this is going to be amazing because, you know, we're going to get to see, like, really cool, unusual, obscure ghosts, maybe from the TV series, maybe from, like, other jobs that they've been on. You know, and you think it's going to be, like, really interesting. And you're going to get to see all of these ghosts, like, terrorise New York City while it's under siege from an ice age, while Garaka's floating around being a dick. And absolutely none of that happens.
Mm-hmm.
I have not had, like, blue balls for, like, a big villain thing or something happening since watching Heroes. Because that used to be the thing with Heroes. Heroes would be like, oh, hey, man, we're going to do the thing if the world ends. Like, there's going to be this brunch. Oh, no, we stopped it from happening. And so, yeah, I don't really know how you feel about, like, the use of Garaka.
I feel like he was really wasted. I feel like Garaka could have been a really interesting villain. Or a really interesting lead villain, I'll say.
Yeah.
Because you are right. Is it the way the trailer lays out the film is it's like every ghost they've ever busted. Versus the Ghostbusters. And you're like, oh, this would be really fucking cool. There's going to be so many ghosts.
Yeah.
They have to split up. They're going to be doing side quests. There's going to be some odd fucking ghosts, some weird shit going on.
And then
on.
They're all going to have to come together at the end. Like
to defeat Garaka.
To defeat Garaka.
And that does not happen.
Yeah.
At all.
And I think for me, that's the biggest... Like, the film has other problems, but for me, that's the biggest misfire, is introducing this fucking crazy awesome villain and the idea of, like, this army of ghosts and then doing, like, piss all with it.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing as well is, I don't, like, one of the other things that I didn't really, and I don't know if somebody can fill me in on this, one of the other things I didn't understand is they mention that the orb that Garaka is in...
Mm-hmm.
Garaka can communicate with ghosts wherever they are, like, in the general vicinity, through the orb. And then, obviously, when he's unleashed, he can obviously unleash all of the ghosts and command that army.
Mm-hmm.
So why doesn't he affect Slimer? Because Slimer's in this, and Slimer's in the firehouse. He's in the vicinity, because we can see that Garaka has far-reaching powers, because Garaka's talking to Melody when she's outside the firehouse. So we know that his power can reach, like, outside of where his orb is. And we see him affecting the marshmallow guys when they're in Razor Colt, and we also see him affecting them when they're in the research and development place. But he doesn't seem to have an effect on Slimer. And I'd love to know why Slimer's not affected by Garaka's, like, powers.
Because Slimer is purely fan service. That's the only reason he's in this film.
Yeah, but that's kind of not the point, though, is it? Like, you know, I'd like to know why. If anyone has an answer, like, if anyone can find an answer for me, like, I would love to know. Also, it doesn't explain how Slimer's able to eat another ghost and neutralise him. Because he eats the fucking Possessor at one point.
That is true.
And then the Possessor just goes away. Because Slimer's eating him.
That is
so, yeah, I'd like to kind of know what Slimer's, like, power is. Or, like, why he's unaffected.
I mean, I feel like to begin with it's because he's inside the firehouse.
Yeah.
Because they refer to it as, like, the stopper between realms at one point. Which makes me think Garaka can't get into it to begin with.
Yeah.
And it's only later on, once, like, the...
containment unit's broken.
Well, even before then, because he comes into the firehouse before the containment unit breaks. But, like, once the containment unit started to fall apart and malfunction, he can then enter the thing. Maybe. Maybe. My argument for this is film science.
Yeah. Spengler science.
Spengler science. But yeah, no, I feel like Garaka was massively fucking wasted. And I do feel like they overpromised.
Yeah, 100%.
On a lot of stuff that's just not in this film. Also, mildly disappointed that both of the new characters, Kumail Nanjiani's character.
Well, because there's three, isn't there? There's three new characters. If you count Patton Oswalt's one, who's really superfluous.
Yeah, but we're not counting him, but I mean, like, him and James Acaster, who were kind of quite prevalent in the trailer. Kamal, not as much. Kamal wasn't in the trailer
very
much.
They had to hide him, though, because of what his arc is.
In the trailer, it was just like, oh, he's the guy who brings the orb in, I was, like, fine with. But, like, James Acaster is in the trailer quite a lot and seems like he is very integral, super important part of the plot. And I feel like they forget he exists for massive chunks of this film.
Yeah,
because he's the kind of character I could have seen Phoebe clinging to.
Yeah.
Because he's also a scientist and he's very much like, everything has an answer, it's science.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I feel like him and Phoebe would have made a really interesting team up, especially in the lab. When Phoebe gets banned from being a Ghostbuster because you're not 18 yet and therefore you're not allowed to Ghostbust anymore, which seems vaguely weird, but sure, because you're doing totally legal things. At that point, because that's kind of when they find out about the secret lab where they've been working on ghosts the entire time, that is the point where I was kind of expecting her to kind of cling to James Acaster's character to a degree, because she's like, we can do ghost science together.
Yeah, I have some feelings on the R&D stuff. But yeah, like, he's another character, like, I thought he would have been at the end.
Yeah, like, he's not there. He misses, like, the entire end.
Yeah,
with Pukey.
Yeah, I thought he would have been there, like, side by side with all of them fighting Garaka. Yeah, I mean, I think... I want to talk a little bit more about Kamal's character in a minute. But yeah, I think James Acaster's character is a really great addition to the cast. I hope he's going to be in more of these. Because he is the kind of character that you don't need him to be, like, on the front line. However, if they talk about, like, what Winston says, you know, and what they've talked about in interviews and stuff, if they do franchise the Ghostbusters out and do, like, spin-offs with different teams, you know, he's somebody that they could be like, oh, where's Lars? Oh, he's in the London unit with the London guys, or he's gone to some other place, you know, to open up a research facility there. And he can act as, like, a training guy. Like, he can be someone that, like, trains new Ghostbusters, and you see him, like, doing all that sort of stuff with, like, new teams and things like that. The research and development stuff. Now, I will say this, and I don't think any of the other reviews I've listened to or read have said this yet. And this is just my personal feelings on it. I think the research and development stuff in this new movie, as little of it as you see, is the biggest love letter to Egon's character and feels more in keeping with keeping Egon's legacy alive than it does introducing his family.
Mm-hmm.
Because none of his family outside of Phoebe really feel representative of who Egon was as a character, other than the fact that they gave them the surname. Even Phoebe, to a degree, doesn't feel as Egon-ish in this one as she did in Afterlife. But I feel like having the Research and Development Centre and having Winston bankroll that feels like, to me, that's their way of honouring Egon's legacy in the franchise, because, you know, in Ghostbusters 2, you see him in the lab with, conducting the experiment on the couple that have been locked in the room for ages, Catherine Reitman's little girl with the puppy, and obviously you see him doing all the science stuff with the mood slime and the toaster and stuff. And to me, that feels like bringing in characters like Lars Pinfield, who very clearly, I'm making up a headcanon backstory for him. He's probably someone, he's about the right age, he's probably someone who was a kid when the original Crossrip happened, or when Viggo was around, who was like, oh my god. And like, he decided that he saw someone like Egon and decided to become a Ghostbuster and follow science because of that. And that keeps that kind of character alive in this universe. And you are right, like, I would love to see like a research and development team that is like Phoebe and Lars Pinfield. And if we are doing a multiverse thing where all of the Ghostbusters movies are included, put Holtzman in it. Bring her up to the, you know, you've got Kate McKinnon, McKenna Grace, like all of these like Egon-esque type characters keeping the research development. And like, I like the idea of it. Like, I think it's really fucking interesting. I don't know how you felt about the R&D stuff.
The R&D stuff. I think part of it was that they were like, here, have James A. Caster. And I was like, I will take James A. Caster thing from you. Thank you.
I've only had Pat Springley for a day.
And if anything happened to him, I would kill everyone in this room and then myself. But no, I quite like the R&D stuff. Because, like, it's a good point of, like, you know ghosts exist. Why are none of you fucking researching shit about this? Tell you one thing that really pisses me off in this film. They're the fucking mayor. Yet again. I hate him in the second film. Second film? First film.
So, Peck, who, he's like an EPA in the first movie. He's now mayor. The mayor in the second one is a different guy. But, yeah, like, I get what your point is.
But they keep doing this of, like, you bust ghosts, but ghosts aren't real. We've seen proof that ghosts are real.
Yeah, they even put it on the, they even show the footage of the fucking, right, literally right at the beginning of the movie, they show the footage of the
Statue of Liberty walking down through, the street. Yeah. And like in this, he's all like, oh, we'll take you ghosts, but who's going to be busting the fucking ghosts who are running rampant around your fucking city? Because you don't seem to be worried about it, baby Kate.
Yeah, like, I'm not being funny. Like, back in the 80s, you could get away, because there's a scene in the trailer, there's an extended part of the scene in the trailer when you first see him, where they do the whole objection, overruled, thank you, like, thing. And he says about, you know, how they convinced everybody that, like, you know, they were fraudsters back then, they're fraudsters now. And I'm like, I'm not being funny, mate. Like, in 1984, you could probably go, oh, yeah, there was a gas leak, everybody hallucinated a Marshmallow Man, like, whatever. You could say that people had a mass delusion. Like, in today's day and age, and I'm genuinely fucking shocked there wasn't, like, a clip of this. You see that fucking sewer dragon go through New York. There is at least 10 people on the street filming that shit on their phone. Because the minute they crash the Ecto-1, people surround the Ecto-1 and start taking pictures of it on their phone. It's a lot harder to have a character like Walter Peck in Ghostbusters in 2024 going, none of this shit's real, you're all frauds. Everybody has a camera phone. And yeah, okay, admittedly, you could go, oh, that's a doctored video, or that's AI or whatever. But I'm sorry, like, 50 people in a city who are completely unconnected to each other having the same footage on their phones wouldn't be a coincidence. And it's undeniable proof that it happened.
Yeah, like, the thing is I kind of get it if they were like, you are causing so much damage.
Yeah.
To the city, you're not insured, you have no liability here, like, you're using children, which he does point out, like, there's a minor hanging out in a car, like, you need to basically be licensed and insured, because this can't carry on, you're destroying parts of New York, completely fair, but it's the way, like, he's like, ghosts ain't real, and I'm like, bitch!
Yeah.
Do you watch any of the rest of the Ghostbusters shit? Like, seriously.
And, like, at the end of the movie, when he's being interviewed by the fucking news and they're all coming out of the firehouse, the sewer dragon and Slimer both fly past him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, literally above his head.
And he's still, at that point, like, going, I'm going to close you down. You're all going to prison. And they're all like, we just saved the fucking world.
Yeah.
Like, maybe take a step back on that one.
Yeah.
But I'm like, it just doesn't make sense in this day and age to have that character at all.
Yeah. Like, there are characters like that. Like, if you want to have a human antagonist in a Ghostbusters movie, then by all means, you can. Like, again, it goes back to Answer the Call when they did the Caravan of Garbage on it. And they talk about the, like, they show the video of what's her face, Erin, coming running out of the thing on YouTube, and she's got all covered in slime. And then they shut her down because she's like, they're like, oh, you're a fraud. And I'm like, literally, they filmed the Aldridge ghost. Why is that footage not on YouTube? You know what I mean? Like, so yeah, like this idea of them being frauds and like nobody having seen like the actual ghost. And also, the other question as well, like in the first couple of movies, they have like merchandise. They get paid to go, like in the second one, they get paid to be children's entertainers. They have merchandise. In the first movie, they get paid because they ask for a $5,000 check from the guy when they bust Slimer. So they're clearly making money from it, but apparently now they're not making money from it. So if they become like a non-profit organisation, like, because they make references at least 3 or 4 times in this movie to the fact that nobody's getting paid, nobody's getting paid a wage. Obviously, everything is being paid for by Winston to obviously keep the firehouse running, to keep the Ecto running, to keep the research facility going. So they have someone to put the ghost. But like when somebody phones 555-2368, the Ghostbusters phone number, do they just go, oh yeah, cool, thanks man, here's a crisp high five and a slice of pizza? Like,
pretty
you
much.
Know what I mean? Like, has it become a non-profit organisation? Like, again, like, why? When did they go from being people who made money to now making, like, no money? You know what I mean?
Why are they now a public service?
Yeah. It's a very, like, and again, that calls into question. If they are a public service, then there's a need for them. You know what I mean? Like, it's a very strange setup. Although, I will say, I do kind of like the idea of them just, like, this is one thing I do like in the Ghostbusters movies. I like they montage it in the first two movies. I like the idea. I like seeing them actually, like, get a call, go out on a job, do the actual, like, thing. Like, you know, which you don't get a lot of in this movie. But I personally, as a Ghostbusters fan, prefer those moments in the film when you actually, like, get to see what being a Ghostbuster is like 9 to 5, like, day in and day out. Like, the same way that being, like, a firefighter or, like, an exterminator or something like that is. That's interesting to me. But again, that movie gets bogged down in a lot of, like, wonky shit.
I think the problem with this is as well is they spend a lot of time focused on family drama.
Yeah.
Like, don't get me wrong. Like, you've got 2 teenagers, I get it. There's going to be fucking drama because you've got teenage children banging. But they spend so much time just focusing on the family drama.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, really? Also, I need to know what Phoebe's fucking thought process was. So Phoebe meets Melody. Uh-huh. They play chess. Phoebe then nearly busts Melody. And then she comes and hangs out at the firehouse with her for a little bit. And then Phoebe's all like, oh, you know that machine we saw that pulled ghosts out of possessed objects? I can take my spirit out of my body and I'll be a ghost. Where is the thought process there? Because we see it take spirits out of inanimate objects that are being possessed. So it's not the soul from that item. It is like a soul that stuck itself onto it.
Yeah.
So how did that, I'm talking in like science terms, how did you get from, oh, that can remove, like it's a possession machine, basically.
Yeah.
It can take my spirit out of my still living body, keep me alive.
No, I think she dies.
No, she doesn't. She stays alive. She says she'll be unconscious.
Oh, yeah, okay. Because I thought she'd like temporarily died.
No.
Maybe I thought that because one of the reviews I listened to 2 days before this movie came out that was spoiler-free kept referencing her dead body.
No, I'm pretty sure she says at one point she will be unconscious.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, so I think the Melody and... I mean, this is as good a time as any to talk about it. The Melody and Phoebe relationship is really interesting in this film because a lot of people have said, like, I've seen reviews saying that this is Ghostbusters QB-ing, which I don't agree with. And I think a lot of people are going to read into this relationship however they want to. They're either going to be like, they were roommates, or they're going to be like, oh, they were just friends. Because I've seen a lot of people say, oh, you know, they try to set up a gay relationship between a girl and a girl ghost. And that's kind of like why Phoebe does what she does, is because she like has feelings for her in that sense. But then I've also just seen people go, oh, yeah, they're just like friends. But this is the second movie in a row now where they've set up this kind of like, Phoebe doesn't really get on with humans. Humans don't understand her, but she has a connection with a ghost. Like, and I think that's kind of what this is meant to symbolise. It's meant to be like, she's a lost teenager who doesn't have any friends. The one thing in her life that she found that was hers, that meant something to her, has been taken away from her. And she's just looking for somebody to understand her and for somebody to, like, be her friend, basically. Mm. That's how I read it. I didn't read any more into it than that.
I do think it's one of those difficult ones, especially with female relationships, and there will always be arguments of, oh, they're queer baiting, because anytime there's even a whiff that something could be more than platonic, it happens. But I wouldn't call this queer baiting, in my opinion, personally. I think it plays out very much as a girl who is very... two girls who are very lost, mm-hmm. Find each other. And I think this is the thing as well, sometimes with female friends. You see what me and my friends are like. Like, we're very close. We're very, like, touchy-feely. Women are a lot more, like, emotionally in tune with each other as a general rule.
Yeah.
And I think it's very easy to read a female friendship as a romantic story, irregardless of whether the intention is there or not, because we are a lot closer in general than like how men are with each other. I just read it as kind of like two lost girls who found each other.
Yeah, nobody's like, hey man, Trevor's trying to fuck Slimer.
No. I'm assuming Trevor got over lucky.
Yeah.
At some point.
And I'm not being funny, in one of those relationships, one of the kids ends up getting slimed in the face by a ghost. So if any relationship, just saying.
Sure.
But yeah, I never read it. I don't know, like, obviously I don't know what Gil Kenan and Jason Reitman's intentions were. And like, if you read it that way, and if that gives you comfort, or if that makes you happy, or if you feel represented by that relationship, then by all means, like, good for you. Like, that's, you know, a good thing for you, and it gives you something to like connect to. But I personally never read it that way. I personally just read it as like, Phoebe is a lonely kid who, like, you know, clearly doesn't hang out with podcasts that much anymore, given how close they were in Afterlife. Mm-hmm. You know, the one thing that she thought her purpose in the world was taken away from her, and now she's just like, I'm just looking for a connection
of some description. Yeah, because, you know, her and Trevor aren't very close. She's currently not really speaking to her mum. She did have Gary, like, her and Gruberson were really close, but ever since her mum started dating, like, that's kind of like started to fall apart as well, because by the point she makes the decision to remove her soul from her body and be totally fine, her and Gruberson have kind of fallen out as well. Mm-hmm. So she doesn't have anybody. She's on her own. As far as I'm aware, these kids don't go to school.
Yeah.
Well,
she is doing schoolwork at one point, though. Because at the table,
but it's never mentioned.
When he rips the thing out of the proton pack and he's like, oh, can you help me? She's doing some kind of work.
But it's never mentioned.
Yeah, I assume she's just homeschooled.
I would assume so.
Or she was, like, doing Ghostbuster shit. I don't really know.
So I do feel like, at that, especially at that point, like, there, she has nobody else. And the only connection she feels like she's made is with Melody.
Mm-hmm.
And she's willing to try anything to be able to hold on to that connection with that person.
Yeah. And I think in doing so as well, Melody takes advantage of her, like, vulnerability, because she's, like, you know, she's under the influence of Garaka, because Garaka's like, I need...
I wouldn't even say she's under the influence of Garaka. Garaka has made her promises, yeah. Which is the one thing she really, truly wants.
Garaka's all like, hey, girl, I'm going to make you see your family again. Bring me the specky one.
And then she's like, oh, no, not that one. I like that one. Can you have a different one? Any other one? Yeah. Any of them?
Do you know what's really funny as well? Is everybody in this movie who works for, like, the science department in the Ghostbusters is really fucking intelligent, yet none of them have figured out, like, how to do, like, some form of, like, LASIK on themselves so they don't have to wear fucking glasses.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I thought the Melody subplot with Phoebe was one of the more unnecessary moments of the film. Because, again, it's like, we're given that we're playing the same beats of, like, Phoebe having a connection to a ghost because ghosts understand her and people don't. Then we're playing a big part of her, like, unleashing the villain. And then, once again, she's also a big part of defeating the villain. And I felt there were very similar beats that they played with Phoebe in this one that they used in Afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the Melody stuff could have been cut out.
Also,
and we could have found another way of Phoebe unleashing Garaka if that's how we were going to go that route.
Also, the Melody twist, we'll call it a twist, was so blatantly obvious from the moment mm-hmm. you met her.
Yeah. Also, I'm not being funny, because I actually said this. I said this on one of YHS podcasts live streams in the chat. I don't understand why they just didn't, instead of having the whole Melody subplot with Phoebe, if they needed someone to unleash Garaka, why they didn't just use the scene with Lars when Lars touches the orb? Because Lars's hand is in the ionizer at the point when it gets frozen. So I don't know why they didn't just pull his soul out, or why they didn't have Garaka take possession of him and unleash that way when he touched the orb.
Because the ionizer wasn't active when he puts his hand into it.
Yeah, but still, like,
it needs to be closed for him to turn it on. So that wouldn't have worked.
But they could have written that in, and we could have cut the whole Melody subplot out, and we could have just...
Yeah.
Gave James Acaster a bunch more stuff to do.
We could have.
Because I personally would have, and I would have gone that route. Because I just think, I don't really think the Melody stuff
adds anything
to the film, other than like a little weird Casper subplot.
And I suppose she's the one to provide power for
Kamel.
Kamel at the end.
Nadim,
there we go.
Since you brought him up, how do you feel about a Ghostbusters movie introducing a human character with supernatural powers?
Oh, so annoyed.
I actually turned to you at one point. I went, is this motherfucker an Avatar? Like, again, it's another weird thing that just comes out of... And, like, the thing is, now what happens? Like, spoiler alert. It's a spoiler part of the review. His character's still alive at the end of this. So does he now become a Ghostbuster, an acquaintance of the Ghostbusters? Does he just fuck off somewhere? Like,
he's a member of the Fire Nation, okay?
Like, what happens to him?
The Firebender. He leaves. He goes to the Fire Nation. He joins the wars. I honestly don't know.
Because it feels like his character was built up to maybe being more of these.
Yeah, the irritating thing is, like, outside of obviously, like, all the ghosts and shit and, like, demons coming from other realms, Ghostbusters is very much rooted in the real world.
Yeah.
And I don't like that they've basically gone, oh yeah, by the way, there's this whole magic group of people who can control fire.
Yeah. It's a very...
What?
Very left field, like, swing. Like, don't get me wrong, Kumail's great in this. And, like, I like the idea of him and his family's lineage being connected to the orb. Like, because that's a reason for him to exist in this world. I think the fact that he is a firebender is a very, like, weird thing. Like, I mean, we're talking about Ghostbusters. Like, everything that happens in Ghostbusters movies is fucking weird. But, like, this is the first time they've actually introduced a human character who's not possessed by anything. He's not a ghost. He's not a spirit. He's not malevolent. But he's somehow a magic character.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I just thought that was a little bit weird. And a little bit of a cheat code for them to defeat Garaka, which I thought, again, like, when they're fighting Garaka and they're all, like, proton streaming him and he, like, puts the fire on him, it's basically him and Phoebe, let's be honest, that defeat Garaka,
mm-hmm.
which, again, takes away a lot of Garaka's, like, mysticism, a lot of his lore, a lot of the reason for him to exist, and a lot of his power base. Like, we know that he was working for, like, a king back in his day and age. And he wiped out, like, entire fucking armies of people. He went on a massive fucking murder spree. Yet he gets taken out by a 15-year-old with a bit of copper. And some
man who's just figured out he can play with fire.
Yeah. And also, he can manipulate fire. He's a firebender, right? Why the fuck is he able to move the proton streams? Because there's the scene where the proton pack gets possessed by the possessor, and he's able to, and because the proton streams aren't fire, they're electrical. So therefore, if he is a fire bender with the powers to bend fire exclusively,
he's not a fire bender.
No, but like he's a fire master. Sorry, if he's only exclusively able to move fire, then why the fuck is he able to move the proton?
I think they reference, like, there's an explanation because they reference a fire with no smoke.
Yeah.
Which technically is light,
mm-hmm.
and the proton packs, protons right. are light particles.
Again, that might be something I might pick up on the second viewing, but when that scene was happening, I was like, this motherfucker couldn't light a candle like 2 minutes ago, and now he's moving proton
power.
Streams.
So when Ray and Trevor are sat explaining his powers to him, and I'm telling Podcast. Him the story, I thought Trevor's there as well.
No,
because Trevor's cheering him on.
Oh, yeah. Podcast is sat there. It's him and Ray and Podcast. They explain the powers to him.
Oh, either way, it doesn't fucking matter. They say to him, they do say a thing. They're like, you know, in the ref, they reference the lightless flame. Nope, that is Magnus Archives. The smokeless flame mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So I think that's basically them being like, it's light particles he can control over, like, actual fire.
Right, okay.
But it's not actually addressed. That could just be me reading into it. Yeah. But that was the only thing that made sense to me, was it's like light particles is what he actually controls.
Like, I didn't mind his character. I thought his character was really fun. Like, Kumail's always good. Like, I love Kumail in anything. Like, I think he's a really good actor. I think he's really fucking funny. I think he gets some great lines in this. I just think him going from, like, schlubby down on his luck guy in his nan's fucking basement to, holy shit, like, I'm the fucking last line of defence in an order of, like, fire people, is a bit like, okay, really? Is that what we're doing? And then you knew the fucking minute they introduced it, he was going to be, like, the one who defeated Garaka.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like,
I don't say, he is one of my favourite scenes in the entire film, though, which is when they find his nana's sex dungeon.
Oh, mate.
And he's like, if this was a sex dungeon, would there be manacles? And they're like, yeah. You know, and he's like, yeah, I did think that after I said it. Mm-hmm. Just really amused me.
Yeah.
Because I was like, it is something I can totally imagine a person saying, like, in that situation.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think, like, again, like, why have we introduced, like, magical people?
Yeah, that makes no sense.
You know. So, let's kind of talk about the rest of the characters, and then we can kind of talk about other stuff that did work and stuff that didn't mm-hmm. work. So, we talked a bit about, like, the main carryover cast from Afterlife, their arcs, and we talked a little bit about the two new characters. I thought, again, there was no need for Patton. Like, don't get me wrong, love Patton Oswalt. Absolutely no need for him to be in this movie. The book that he has, absolutely no reason why that book couldn't have just been in Razor Cult, and they could have done the stop motion animation stuff exactly the same way that they do in this.
Mm-hmm.
Other than the fact that they had to go to the library to see the library ghost.
Which makes no sense, because they bossed the library ghost
in
the first film, and the library ghost is in the tank. And this all happens before the tank gets busted and all of the ghosts escape. So there is zero reason that library ghost would be in the fucking library.
Unless they let her out again, which is why he's banned from the library. Because the guy says to
him, I feel like he's banned from the library after the first incident, though.
Yeah, but like, I mean, I wasn't mad that she was in it. I'm sure you saw me jump out of my seat when she was in it. I was
But it makes no fucking sense.
And like, Fortitude getting shot in the face.
Yeah.
Poor Fortitude.
Oh,
I like the Ecto C, the little,
Ecto-C's
the fucking
really
Wallace and Gromit bike and sidecar.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool. Yeah, there's absolutely no reason for the library stuff to take place other than to get the library ghost callback and to get the scene where she blows up Fortitude, which is the lion out one of the lions outside the
which
library.
Which is back at the end of the film.
Yeah,
as if nothing happened.
Probably just fucking repaired it, didn't they? But yeah, so There was no reason for Patton Oswalt's character to be in this and for us to take that diversion. That all literally could have taken place at Razor Colt. And he could have just literally whipped out one of the books at Razor Colt and said, this is Garaka, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I feel like the only reason it's there was for the chant, for the introduction of the what are they called? The tube thing with the chant.
Yeah.
But like, it's destroyed anyway, so it doesn't fucking matter.
Yeah. The clear Evil Dead homage scene. But yeah, what did you... So, I guess we're going to have to talk about them. What did you think about the returning original characters in this one?
Winston being there makes a lot of sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's the one who created the R&D department, basically has paid for it all.
Yeah.
Is keeping the Ghostbusters going. Ray, I can kind of get on board with him being there because I suppose he's still quite heavily involved in all of it. But just from another end of the spectrum, running Razor Colt. I have no idea why the fuck Bill Murray is back, or Annie Potts.
Yeah.
I know everyone's really happy because Annie Potts is back and she is cool, I do love her, but there's zero reason for either of them to be there.
Yeah, Venkman's like the most superfluous one to me.
He literally just shows up at the end of the movie, like, sup?
Yeah.
Okay.
And, like, the thing is as well, like, I'm always, like, don't get me wrong, I'm always happy to see the original Ghostbusters. But I think the inclusion of the original Ghostbusters is what is stopping the franchise from moving forward. Now, I know there's probably going to be a lot of really big Ghostbusters fans that listen to this episode. And trust me, I'm with you. I'm one of you guys. Like, honestly, I truly, genuinely am. I love Ghostbusters more than I love most other things in my life. But at the same time, I feel like the writers, directors and creatives now need to have enough faith in the new characters that they've created over the last two movies and enough trust in us as an audience to move forward with those characters and still show up for these films without having to give them the cameos where they don't really do anything. Ray makes sense, and I think Ray gets the most arc out of the three of them. Like, I love the fact that him and Podcast have a YouTube channel now. Like, I like the fact that, you know, they set that up in Afterlife, that he's the guy who listens to Podcast's podcast. And, like, I like the fact of them as a double act. Like, that, some of the best stuff in the movie is those two together. And I think, you know, even if he wasn't a Ghostbuster, he would still be living in New York. He would still have Razor Colt. That's where we see him in Afterlife. That's where we see him in this one. And he has that kind of glassy, nostalgic look in his eye when he sees the Ecto go past of like, you know, I've lost my friends. I've like, what is my... He has that midlife crisis of like...
I don't think it's even that. I think it's just it's a little smile of we're still going.
Yeah.
Ghostbusters are still Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
That's all I really
He's like, but I also, I miss this. Like, I miss...
Yeah.
You know.
I just see. I think my problem with him being in it is you are right. Him and Podcast would make a great double act. The problem is they don't give Podcast anywhere near enough to do, and they don't even they take so in the fur in Afterlife. He has quite a lot of fun lines. He's quite an entertaining character. They remove a lot of that from him in this film.
Yeah, he's still really funny in it though. I still think like Logan Kim's great in this. Like I still think he's really funny. But yeah, he's just not given enough to do. I mean, I personally think the inclusion of the original Ghostbusters is now kind of what's holding the franchise back.
Yeah,
like,
said that.
You know, we need to let those guys go now, and we need to be able to let these new characters fly on their own. And like, if we didn't get Frozen Empire, if Afterlife was the last Ghostbusters movie that we got, I think it ends on a perfect note. And I think this movie also ends on a perfect note. Like, either of these two movies would be an excellent swan song for those original Ghostbusters. And the thing is as well, like, they set up in Afterlife that Dana and Venkman are still together. They never address in Afterlife what happened to Oscar. They never address in this one what happened to Dana, why Dana's not there, what their relationship is. All it would have taken is for someone to go to Venkman, have you checked on Dana? Is she safe? Are her and Oscar okay? And for him to go, yes, I warned them, they've left, they've gone somewhere else. You know, just so we know that those characters are still out there. He's still in con. We don't need to see them necessarily. But I think this movie and Afterlife, both being connected to Ghostbusters 2, and us still not having any fucking idea of what happened to Oscar, who, I'm not being funny, I genuinely did think at some point they were going to fucking make James Acaster Oscar. I was fully prepared for them to be like, Lars Pinfield's not your real name, is it? Oscar! But I was really, like, expecting that to happen. With all the other mental shit that happens in this movie.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, it wouldn't have fucking surprised me if they'd just gone, oh, he's Oscar. And I'd be like, okay, fair enough. Like, you know, because I think a lot of people, when they saw him before his character name got revealed, assumed he was going to be Oscar. Mm. But yeah, like, I think we are embedded enough now with these new characters that if we get a third movie, fourth movie, if they start spinning off or whatever, hopefully we get to see these new characters do a lot more. And, like, you know, because I think the core team is going to be the Spengler family, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Or the Gru Spenglersons. And then obviously, like, you'll have your ancillary characters like Pinfield and Lucky and Podcast. But I think that, for me,
I do feel like we can just call them the Spenglers now.
Yeah.
Like, agreement does get made.
Is part of the route forward now, is we need to tell new stories in different parts of the world, in different places, with different sets of Ghostbusters. Because, you know, we see this in the real world. The Ghostbusters is for everybody. I go on Instagram, I go on YouTube, I go on Facebook. There's Ghostbusters in Portsmouth, there's Ghostbusters in Kent, there's Ghostbusters in Mexico, Belgium, France. You know, there is not actual Ghostbusters, but Ghostbusters franchises worldwide who are fans of this franchise, who I'm sure would love to see, like, what it would be like to see actual French Ghostbusters or Mexican Ghostbusters or Japanese Ghostbusters or English Ghostbusters on
screen.
I think
the problem with that, though, as much like with anything like that, is the idea is great, but also it very quickly, because, like, just to pass it back to one of my favourite things, Leverage is back.
Mm-hmm.
Redemption, love it. But they are now Leverage International, so there's different teams all over the world doing Leverage.
Yeah.
They've not made any of those, and I never want to see any of them.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I like the little, like, stories. I just can kind of get oh, you know, Hartus is not here right now. He's out with the team in South America taking over a government.
Yeah.
And I'm like, he's doing what now? I don't want to see it, but I like those little nods. So even if they just address that there was now Ghostbusters International, and every so often they, like, even if they use the original Ghostbusters and be like, has anyone heard from Winston in a while? And, like, someone goes, oh, you know, he's in, like, fucking
Puerto Rico,
out of Mongolia,
yeah,
fucking dealing with, like, an ancient deity. Or, like, I'm sorry, he's saying what now?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Just, like, address that it exists. They don't necessarily have to make it, but just those little nods to the fact that they do exist and there are other ghosts. Because surely there is not just ghosts in New York.
Yeah. Well, I think when we talked about this on the Afterlife episode, I made mention of, like, London. London's been, you know, like, you go down to fucking Whitechapel, where the London Dungeons, all that stuff takes place. There's a lot of haunted history in the UK. You can go to Japan and do, like, little ghost girls. You could do fucking toilet ghosts. You could do all
fucking
that. You know, I'm saying the same thing I said in an Afterlife episode, but you could, there are, you know, China, like, any other parts of, like, the world.
I think China also has toilet ghosts.
Yeah, there's so many parts of the world where this idea could exist and could flourish. And don't get me wrong, like, I'm always happy to see the original Ghostbusters. Those are the characters that I fell in love with as, like, a five, six-year-old child. Those are the characters that have been with me for all of my life. But I also realise that in order for this franchise to continue to thrive and flourish, we need to kind of let it be its own thing now. It needs to have time with these new characters for younger generations and for newer people and newer fans to get acquainted to the stories of these characters. So in 20 years time, somebody who's just had a child now can sit their child down and go, we're going to watch the movie with Gary Gruberson and Callie and stuff in. And they can attach to those characters the way that we did when we were children.
Mm. Not me, but yeah.
Yeah, but that would be like my, but to me, like, I know it seems like I've been really negative about this film. There is a lot of stuff in this movie that I actually really loved. The sewer dragon chase, fucking brilliant. The sewer dragon chase at the beginning of this film is fucking awesome. Like, seeing them use all the new tech, like the drone, they brought back the trap from Afterlife on the wheels. Like, seeing fucking Gruberson driving the Ecto-1 through the streets of New York. That's really cool. What did you think of the opening scene? Because I really like the opening scene with the frozen people when they all just fucking start shattering.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I thought that was... Because there's some really good horror moments in this, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this one feels scarier than Afterlife. And I know that the BBFC and a few people have warned about taking small children to this. I don't think there's anything in it that's going to scare the shit out of small children. But there's a couple of scenes where you're like... Because there's a jump scene that got you, wasn't it? When they were in the research thing, one of the ghosts hit the glass and you, like, jumped. I think there's a couple of scenes in this where they're, like, they push that horror envelope a little bit. And I think Garaka's quite a scary villain.
Mm-hmm.
I think he looks fucking cool. I also wonder, I'd love to know from Gil Kenan, Jason Reitman, or James Acaster himself, how much of his stuff was written and how much of it was improvised. Because I feel like all the science stuff is written. But, like, the scene where the possessor's, like, tapping on the glass and he's like, can't play right now. He's like, if you behave, you might get a tennis ball later. And he's like, I know you see me working right now. That feels like Acaster. Mm-hmm. That feels like it came from him. And the joke when he says, he's like, is that what you... lets you listen to the ghosts. No, it's the silence that lets you hear the ghosts. That feels like an Acaster original.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a couple of scenes in the trailers in this movie that are cut out. There's a scene in the trailer where Bill Murray... It's in all the promotional pictures and it's in the trailer where Bill Murray's talking to Paul Rudd. He shows up in the film and Paul Rudd says to him, what would you have done in a situation like this? He's like, oh, probably would have had a shower, shave, hit the clubs. And he goes, oh, helpful. Not in the film. The extended scene with Walter Peck... Yeah, where they do the sustained, overruled, not in the film.
Mm-hmm.
The bit at the end of the first trailer where they're all in the red parkas. You know the thing that convinced everybody to buy the red parkas? Not in the film. Where Paul Rudd's going, ho, 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 ho. None of them,
except Lucky.
Yeah.
Lucky's the only
one. And Lars, because Lars has got one on when he meets Pukey.
Are the only ones who have the red coats.
Yeah. So that's not in the trailer, not in the film. And there's, like, a couple of other little bits that are in the trailers that are, like, are not in the film as well. But I don't really feel like the film suffered from having... I feel like there's a couple of scenes that cut off too quickly where it feels like there's more to a scene. But I don't really feel like, in terms of storytelling, the movie was missing too much.
The ice going into Lucky's eye as well.
Yeah.
Not in the film.
Yeah. But I like the fact that when we talk about the horror, there's a couple of like nods to like really classic horror movies. You got the nods to like The Evil Dead. Christine surprisingly gets a fucking nod in this movie as well. Because the Ecto-1 becomes possessed, which is really like that was really cool. Again, like that's something that I would have loved to have seen expanded upon. I would have loved to have seen a possessed Ecto-1 like running through the streets.
Mm-hmm.
Like they cut that scene way too short. Again, it sets up something cool and then cuts the scene way too short.
Mm-hmm.
But that would have been really cool to like see a possessed Ecto-1 like flying around the streets of New York and like causing mayhem and causing trouble. That would have been really, really cool.
Weirdly enough, I'm going to say this, like in Answer the Call, when Slimer and Lady Slimer steal the Ecto-1.
Yeah, and then they go fucking batshit with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, there are some really good scenes in this movie. Like, you mentioned the family drama, one of the really, like, heartfelt scenes in this is the scene where Gary thinks he's talking to Phoebe.
Yeah.
And she's not there. And I thought that scene was really cute. And I like the end when she calls him Dad. Because I don't think you heard me say it. Like, when he says, he's like, I'm her step teacher, and he's like, oh, you're not your dad, and I was like, no, he's science daddy now. I was like, I said it under my breath. I don't think you heard me.
I did not,
because Paul Rudd is science daddy. But yeah, like, what to you were some of your favourite moments?
Anything with Springleaf.
Pat Springleaf, aka
Pat Springleaf.
James Acaster.
Fucking dirty.
Mate, I'm a bit gutted we didn't get to see him thrown up on by Pukey.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the other scene that's cut out of the trailer. When Trevor goes, oh, have we got weapons? And he pulls the tray out of the Ecto-Z. And he goes, we got loads of weapons.
Oh, yeah, we don't see any of the other weapons, do we?
Yeah. He just pulls the thing out, but he doesn't say the line. He just does the scenery, yeah.
Anything with James Acaster in is delightful. I think his character's really fucking entertaining.
I hope he's part of the core cast going forward.
Yeah, I really hope he stays around, becomes part of the core bunch of ghosty bees. I loved the stop motion animation of the backstory of Garaka. I think that was really fucking cool. I really like the opening sequence with the adventure group in the all getting frozen to death. That was really fun.
And the horse and cart fireman.
The horse and cart fireman coming out of Hook and Ladder as well. Yeah. But outside of that, I'm not going to lie with you, nothing really stuck in my head as, like, just a really great scene. I really love the few scenes of Trevor trying to lure Slimer out.
Yeah, because I don't know if you know this, that's part of a deleted subplot from Ghostbusters 2. So on the Ghostbusters 2 Blu-ray, there's a bunch of deleted scenes of Lewis, like, following Slimer around the firehouse and trying to capture him, and they're having, like, a little game of... And I think that's a really cool callback that they managed to put that subplot in this new movie. Sorry to cut you off. But yeah, I just thought it was really cool.
Yeah, I think those are quite fun. I find both Phoebe and Callie a little bit unbearable in this film.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think... I think Phoebe is being a little bit too much of a brat. Like, I understand she is, like, 15.
Mm-hmm.
But she's being a little bit too much of a brat. But I also feel like Callie isn't being a very good parent.
Yeah, like, that scene in the prison when she gets arrested and she goes, oh, if you weren't a Spengler, you'd be answering our phones.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that's so rude. Like...
But also, I do feel like Callie is a big letdown in this film as well, because she's just not being a good parent in any way, shape, or form to either of the kids.
Yeah.
Like, there's the bit where Trevor comes bounding downstairs, and he's like, Mum, there's something in the attic. And she's like, okay, deal with it then.
Yeah, like, you're an adult.
Like, you live in a fucking haunted firehouse. There is ghosts in your basement. Your son comes downstairs going, Mum, I need your help. Your answer is go deal with it. While she plays on her phone.
Yeah.
I found her really unbearable. I thought she was really poor at doing the parenting in this. But then I also found Phoebe to be quite insufferable. And I love Phoebe as a character, I really do, but I found her really insufferable at points. Also her choices she makes. And they're way too quick to be like, oh no, it's not your fault.
Mm.
Like, the way they've treated her throughout the entire first half of this film, well, first three quarters, first... four-fifths of this film, the minute Garaka gets let out by Phoebe, they're all like, no, it's not your fault. And I'm like...
It fucking is.
I'm sorry. Where is the parent who literally throughout the rest of this film has been like, everything's your fault, Phoebe?
Mm.
Like...
Yeah.
Not great. But yeah, that's what I would say.
Yeah, I think... Yeah, I mean, there's not much in terms of, like, big fantastical set pieces in this one. And I do feel like... I'd love to know, like, how much of this actually got deleted. Like, in terms of, like, deleted scenes. Like, is there more stuff with Garaka? Like, we know that there's a lot of stuff that's used in the promotional stuff that's not in the film. And I do wonder, A, when the trailers were cut, and B... if they put misdirect stuff in the trailers because there was too much stuff in the film with certain characters they couldn't use because spoilers. So they were like, we're going to have to use, like, deleted footage to sell, like, the film in trailers. But I never really know with stuff like that. But, yeah, it feels like I would have either taken an extra 20 minutes in this movie. I would have happily had this movie be, like, 2 hours and 25 minutes if we got more Garaka and his army of ghosts taking over New York stuff. Or, if they wanted to keep the runtime to 2 hours, I'd have, like, taken out the Patton Oswalt scene. I'd have taken out the Melody stuff. And I'd have tightened the film up in those places. Because, to me, it felt like they were unnecessary diversions.
I've taken out the entire family drama. It takes, like, a massive chunk in the middle of this film.
What do you think of, like, the team-ups in this movie, though? Like, because at one point we get Lucky Trevor and Lars together. which I think is kind of a cool team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like the idea of Lucky and Lars working together. Like, I think that's really cool. I think they make an interesting team. I like Ray and the kids. Like, I love Ray's dynamic with Phoebe and Podcast. Although she can't seem to decide what she wants. Because sometimes she calls him Dr. Ray. Sometimes she calls him Dr. Stans, which I think is fucking hilarious. But I thought that dynamic was quite interesting. I don't necessarily know how I feel about the family as, like, the core group of Ghostbusters going forward. Like, that's why I keep saying, like, I would love to have Lucky still around. I want Podcast to be an actual Ghostbuster. And, like, I want Lars kept around. If we're not going to do any more with the OGs, like, I'd like to have a few extra characters, new characters, that we can cycle in and out of the main group. Because I'm still not convinced by Callie being a Ghostbuster. Like, her complete 180 from fuck my dad, fuck science, to, oh yeah, I know what a containment unit is. Oh yeah, I'm fucking a scientist. Like, so I obviously know what all of this is now. You know, is really jarring and really whiplash inducing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's just because they were like, well, 3 years has passed or 2 years has passed. You know, this is who she is now. And I'm like, no, that's not a good enough reason. So I do kind of like, I hope the research facility stays around. Like, I love the whole R&D thing. But yeah, I think I need to watch this one. I think this is the first time I've walked out of seeing a mainline Ghostbusters movie. Because obviously my thoughts on Answer the Call are completely different, because it's a different universe. But I feel like this is the first time I've walked out of a mainline Ghostbusters movie and gone,
eh.
Yeah, yeah. Because the first two, even the second one, which I know a lot of people don't like, I grew up with those movies. For like 25, 30 years, that was all I thought I was going to get. So I hold those movies, both of them, in extremely high regard. Because I'm like, these may be the only Ghostbusters movies I ever get. And I fucking loved Afterlife. We did 2 hours on Afterlife. You know, if you want to go back and listen to our thoughts on Afterlife and why that movie means so much to me, like, it's episode, like, 160. Like, you can go back and listen to that. Or episode 60. It's episode 60. You can go back and listen to that. It's in our feed. But I just felt with this one, like, I understand a lot of the criticisms. Yes, I think a lot of the critics are being way too harsh on this movie. I think this movie has been review bombed by certain critics with certain agendas, but I'm not getting into that. But I do think, like, a lot of people and their opinions on this, where they've, you know, mentioned it's like nostalgia mining, or like it's a film that's made by committee, doesn't really hold weight. Like, Ghostbusters movies have a formula to them. They're always going to kind of stick to that formula. But I do think there are certain things in this movie that stop it from being a truly great film.
I think the problem is that they don't stick to the formula.
They do and they don't.
They don't really.
I'd love to know why you think they don't.
Most don't they do.
I think Garaka... Look what they did to my boy. I think Garaka was such a villain and he got done so dirty. And I just hope he comes back at some point. I hope he just, like, whoops everyone's ass. And that's the other thing as well. Like, I'm not being funny. They brought in Garaka, who's, like, this really super fucking gnarly villain. And I'm like, it never felt like the stakes were raised that high. Like, I'm not the only person who thinks that one of that ensemble of Ghostbusters should have fucking died, right?
Mm-hmm.
At least at the... And I'm not saying it's a new character or an old character, but at the very least, one of them should either have been killed or seriously injured. Like, to kind of... You don't hype up a threat that's like, we need X amount of Ghostbusters to fight him. And then him not do anything. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, very, very disappointed in how they handled the Garaka situation. But we should probably wrap this up. What are your final thoughts on Ghostbusters Frozen Empire? And what's your rating out of 5 for this one?
I feel like I got catfished by a movie. I feel like this is not the film I was sold on. Which I hold a lot of issues with. I feel like if you're going to sell me on a movie, you need to provide that movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's only one film it's ever happened where I'm like, actually, I'm not pissed off at it. I enjoy the film I got, but I can't what film it is.
Good. Is it a recent film?
I think so. I can't remember. But yeah, it's very rare that you'll get me and I'll be like, actually, I'm really glad that was that and not the film that you sold me on. But yeah, this film catfished the fuck out of me. I think everyone does a really good job in the film with what they are given. I think the problem is the ensemble cast has gotten too big at this point. We need to lose some members pretty sharpish because there are too many chefs in the kitchen at this point for it to be a film where everyone gets fair screen time and it all gets a decent character development.
Yeah, for it to be narratively satisfying.
Yeah. I think Garaka was wasted. I would have liked for him to... this to maybe be the first movie in a series of films leading up to Garaka.
Mm-hmm.
Of, like, in this film, we have, like, a street-level big bad, and then in the next we have, like, his lieutenant, and then, like, the ghosts all get unleashed, and we've got, like, a series of films where, like, they're having to try and figure out who the big bad is while trying to collect all of the ghosts that have escaped.
I also... on that light, I also... actually, no, I'll save it for my final thoughts.
But yeah, I really wanted to like this film because I did very much enjoy Afterlife and I was wildly disappointed by the film that they gave me.
Yeah.
And I'm really annoyed by that because I really wanted to be able to sit here and go, oh, you're all just being whiny bitches, this film's great. And this film is not great. I don't think it's bad, I just don't think it's great. And for that reason, I'm going to be at a 3.
Yeah, I think when it comes to Garaka, I clearly think Afterlife was meant to be a standalone thing with a tease at the end of, we have places to go if they give us another movie, but like our story is told. Like, you have Ghostbusters, you have Ghostbusters 2, you have Ghostbusters Afterlife, you have a nice little trilogy there, everything is wrapped up, the OGs can ride off into the sunset, you know. And I don't think this movie was planned. Like, it's not like they went, we have a plan for like a trilogy, which is refreshing nowadays that they didn't have like a plan. So clearly they wrote this movie when it got greenlit as a next chapter in the Ghostbusters franchise, taking a lot of inspiration from the real Ghostbusters cartoon. Now, I see things slightly differently to you in the way that they would have built this up. I personally would have taken the amount of screen time that Garaka had in this if they'd had the balls to maybe end the movie on a cliffhanger.
That I would have been fine with.
And then you get more... so Garaka's unleashed, they're fighting him. You get that sequence where all of the OGs and all of the new ones are pinned up against the wall by the ice. Phoebe's got the copper-infused proton pack. Garaka does that bit where he freezes her. And he just as he touches her... the screen goes black. And we know that Garaka is on the loose. Garaka's got an army of ghosts on the loose. And all of the Ghostbusters are in mortal peril. Then you set the next film. You tell this story over two films. And then you've got... so you've done all the setup in this movie. And then you've got the second movie, which is what this movie could have been. With the army of ghosts, Garaka. Like, the Ghostbusters are, like, truly in mortal danger. Like, where do we go from here? But it feels like for the threat level that he was, they played it incredibly safe.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like you said, they over-delivered. They over-promised, under-delivered. It seems like Garaka seems like that character in like D&D where you put a cheat code in, where he has like all of the maxed out weapons and all of the maxed out armor, but he doesn't have any of the experience points. So he just gets killed really easily because you've cheated.
He's maxed out on everything, but his charisma is shit.
Yeah. And they didn't give my boy any good lines, except for, your world will shatter bones and ice in form of my new empire. And I was like, yeah! I was like, fuck yeah, Garaka's gonna ruin everyone's lives!
And then they went, nah.
And then they went, nah. Yeah. So I kind of am inclined to agree with you. Like, as it currently stands, it's my least favourite of the four canonical, like, mainline Ghostbusters movies. I am going to go and see it again next week. I'm going to give it a week and then go and see it again, see if my feelings change, see how I feel about it. But yeah, I'm nowhere near as excited or elated for the state of the franchise as I was coming out of Afterlife. And I really hope if we get more of these, like, you know, they take more risks and they take more, like, you know, they put a few more writers on this. They bring some new ideas, some new blood. Don't get me wrong, I love the fact that Jason Reitman is still attached to this. I love the fact that it's staying in the Reitman family. Maybe let Catherine write one. That would be really cool. But yeah, at the moment, I'm just a bit like, it wasn't what I was hoping for and it wasn't what I was expecting. But I'm so glad that everyone that's seeing it, that's a huge Ghostbusters fan, is getting a kick out of it. Like, you know, I'm always going to be excited for more Ghostbusters movies, and I'm always happy for the fandom to, like, have more films and more content and things to talk about. It's just, at the moment, I don't really know how I feel. But that might change on a second viewing. That might change on a third viewing. Like, we'll see. So, yeah, I'm going to give it a 3.5. The half is for the sewer dragon scene. And Slimer, who I love in this. Slimer's back. My boy. Yeah, so that's our thoughts on Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. Have you guys seen Frozen Empire? Are you looking forward to seeing Frozen Empire? Like, I assume if you've listened this far, you have seen Frozen Empire. Like, come join us on social media, SIMAHFpod on Twitter. So I'm Arid Horror Fan, all lowercase, all one word on Tumblr and Instagram. Let us know your thoughts on Ghostbusters Afterlife, Frozen Empire, sorry. Let us know where you think the franchise can go from here, what your hopes are, some of your favourite scenes, like, what you think is next for Ghostbusters. If you're going to the cinema opening weekend, and you see any of your local Ghostbusters, go support them, go take pictures with them, you know, help them raise money for charity and all the good causes that they're out there doing, you know, this week. And yeah, we'll see you in the next one. Take care, guys. Stay spooky, stay safe. Bye-bye.
Bye.